Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Mike's on. He's ready to go.
On the Fan.
New York Sports Radio.
Mike's on. Mike's on.
All right, we'll get back to the baseball and the old DeGrom stuff in a minute. As I said, we were going to have Peter King on. Peter has made a move to NBCSports.com among his other duties. And he'll be, his new column is Football Morning America every Monday on NBCSports.com. This first column includes some stuff with Nick Foles, with Tony Romo. On his golf, the NFL officiating overhaul, which I want to get to because that is going to be a huge problem in the NFL this year. As a matter of fact, with the rule changes, it's going to be a nightmare the first 5 or 6 weeks. I already talked about that. And some stuff with the Eagle head coach and also with Carson Wentz. And also a special section, What I Learned, which debuts with Ben McAdoo, which was excerpted the last couple of days and got a lot of attention. Peter, welcome. How are you?
Mike, how's it going?
Good, thank you. Now, everything's good. Yourself?
Very good, thanks. Good talking to you.
All right. You've moved over. First, tell me about the move.
Well, you know, I'd been at SI for 29 years, and the last 5 years I ran this website, the MMQB, and we had 9 young people there kind of chomping at the bit to get going and to be doing more. It just felt like it was the right time, A, to leave, and B, I think that in this age of 24/7, 365, May, June, and the first half of July, you're pulling out your hair trying to feed the monster when the monster doesn't really have a lot of interesting things to be fed. You know, for a long time, and I realize this is probably not going to elicit any sympathy or empathy from anybody, but the draft was over, you pick out a couple of interesting stories to do, and then it's see you at training camp. And the last 5 years, the draft is over, and it's you still got 10 weeks of content to provide. So that was a little bit wearing. I had 2 brothers who died young, and it sort of hit me a little bit the last couple of years, and so I decided to make the move. NBC was nice enough to let me do my column and let me do some stuff on Football Night in America, so here I am.
And you'll still do your training camp stuff, right?
Yeah, I'm going to do the training camp tour starting Saturday morning in Bourbon, Illinois, seeing the Bears. So, yeah, that'll be good.
All right, let's start with McAdoo. A couple people tracked him down after they saw the first things that came out from your meeting with him. First of all, how did you find him? And tell the folks what you found.
I found him, you know, he called me soon after he got fired, and he just basically wanted an impartial voice to basically talk to him a little bit about what went wrong, what he could be better at and everything. And so I talked to him a few times, and then after I left SI and figured that maybe I could do something with him for a future column, I reached out to him, and so we started talking. And one of the things that hit me was he told me that he had compiled a 209-page, what he called a manifesto, from all different people around football about every aspect of the game, about the media, about things he might have done wrong, things he could do better in the future. And so I got this thought in my mind, why not write something that basically said, hey, here's what I learned. So he talked about learning from, he wished that he handled the Odell Beckham situation differently for 4 years, not just 2, not just when he became the head coach. He wished he handled Odell Beckham, the person, and not just put Odell Beckham, the football player, into a good position to make plays. And I think probably the other thing that he talked about that people would be interested in is the, you know, his thing about Eli Manning, you know, making the decision. I don't think he would have made a different decision. I think he would have handled it. He told me that he thinks where he has to improve really is in his bedside manner and in being a little bit better in trying to explain things. Because I think, Mike, if you're whatever they were at the time, 3-9, you're not going to make the playoffs. I think and, you know, you need to explain, because he didn't explain very well at the time exactly what his thought was. Nobody wanted to see Geno Smith. Everybody wanted to see Davis Webb. So just say, hey, Davis Webb isn't ready right now. We're playing Geno Smith for a week, maybe two, but then we're going to see Geno Smith, let's say, the last 3 weeks of the year, or we're going to see Davis Webb the last 3 weeks of the year. This guy basically was never very good with the press. He realizes it. He knows he has to get better. But I don't think he regrets his decision with Eli Manning at all.
All right. So that obviously takes care of McAdoo, who I'm sure wants to coach again, but he's going to take a year off. He's getting paid this year anyway, so he'll have to he's young enough. He's only 41, so he's got plenty of time. Peter, the most interesting thing I think of all this, and one the fans will have the biggest issue with, is I think we're headed for a calamity, and it deals with the fact that TV has stolen some top referees, including right. The number one guy in Sterator. They have put a lot of young guys, inexperienced guys, on crews, and they've made rule changes that are going to be very difficult to discern, including the kickoff rule, which is going to be very hard to call. And I think that's going to lead us to, if people think we've had chaos in the rules and in officiating games before, I think the first 4 or 6 weeks of the season could be a nightmare.
Totally agree. I wrote about this some this week, and I think one of the things that really, really struck me in talking to two coaches out in Tahoe last week at this golf tournament where I got Aaron Rodgers and talked to a bunch of people, but the thing that I think coaches are really concerned with, Mike, is not necessarily whether the four new inexperienced referees are going to be able to make the right call on, you know, roughing the passer or whatever. That isn't it. It is control of the game. When you lose, in my opinion, the two best referees in the NFL at controlling game, big games. Why did you always see Gene Steratore on Patriot games? Why did you always see Ed Hockley on the 425 games and on the Sunday night games? You saw these guys on the big games because the NFL had the most confidence that they could control the games. So you lose Steratore, you lose Hockley, you lose Terry McCauley. Those are not only three of the best refs, but they're three of the guys who you have the most confidence in every single week to call a good game. Now, sometimes they didn't, but you had confidence in them. Now, I couldn't agree with you more. You put on guys who, there's two new refs who've been in the NFL for 3 years, two new refs who've been in the NFL for 4 years prior to this year. And before that, they were in big conferences as referees. So don't get me wrong. They are going to know the rules, and they have been in position to be refs before. But you add this, Mike, to the fact that there are four of the 17 refs are new. Four of the existing 17 refs right now are 64 or older. And that's Walt Anderson, Walt Coleman, Pete Morelli, and Tony Correnti. So over the next year or two, you're going to see them go also, most likely. So you're going to have a brand new half-a-year refs, say by 2020, are going to be very, very inexperienced. And look, in my opinion, the biggest thing that they're going to have to do, the biggest rule, and I agree with you, the kickoff rule is going to be very weird.
Because it's
going to be different. It's going to be different.
And you can't even tell. You got to know what the formation was before you can tell if it was a penalty.
You're right about that. That's going to be a very different thing to do. But in my opinion, Okay. Okay, and I'm not minimizing the importance of the kickoff, but the kickoff is whatever it is. You know, six or eight of those every game. All right. Now this using your helmet.
Oh yeah, it's another one. It's going to be a nightmare. Yes.
That is going to be and also using your helmet when it comes to potential disqualifications, potential ejections. I mean, these are the kind of things. The smartest thing the NFL did this year is on that helmet rule, is that if a guy is ejected, those helmet plays can be replay reviewed. But in general, to me, that helmet thing, the catch rule, the kickoff rule, this was already going to be the most challenging year for officials in years. And now you add to the fact that a quarter of the referees are going to be brand new, and that's going to be difficult.
No question. We're talking with Peter King about his move to NBC and also the stuff in his first column. You know, it's interesting. You talk about the different folks you mentioned in there. Foles and where Foles is right now. I mean, that's just the dynamics of the two quarterbacks is going to be a fascinating story for the year. I mean, how that plays out. I mean, it's a very unusual situation. It's going to be a fascinating situation.
53 MVPs, not 53 different MVPs, because some guys have gotten it twice or three times, but there's been 53 most valuable players awarded in NFL history. And Nick Foles will be the first one to start the following year as a benched player, you know, unless Carson Wentz isn't ready.
Right.
That's the big reason. There's no way I would entertain offers for Foles unless they're absolutely ridiculous, because how would you like to trade Foles the way they traded Bradford 2 years ago? And then the second week of the year, you have complications with Carson Wentz, and all of a sudden you've got to start playing Nate Sudfeld. So I don't think that the Eagles now, I'm not saying there's no way that they would trade him, but I think it's very unlikely they would trade Foles and just go with Wentz, even if Wentz looks like he's going to be okay for the year. They brought Foles in last year, at this time to be an insurance policy for Carson Wentz. Without him, they never would have won a Super Bowl, and so I think they're going to do the exact same thing. As far as Foles goes, look, he told me flat out, this is going to be hard for him at times this year, but he says, at the absolute worst, I'll be a free agent in 2019 and get to pick my team. Mike, a lot of people have said to him in the last few months, I bet you were ticked off you weren't traded. I don't think he's really that ticked off for a very simple reason. He would not have gotten to choose his team. Imagine if he's traded to Cleveland and he feels pressured to sign, say, a five-year contract. He already saw what a dysfunctional organization looked like when he was in St. Louis a couple of years ago. And I'm not saying Cleveland will be one of those, but Cleveland certainly has been a losing organization. So I think he would rather be a backup with the Eagles this year and then get to choose his team in 2019.
We're talking with Peter King about everything going on with the NFL. It's just around the corner. Before you know it, it'll be here. Training camps will open in less than 10 days around the country. Always the baseball all-star game, a time to think about the NFL. You mentioned Romo and his golf dreams. You know, Romo's career, he exited from the scene quickly. He hit it off pretty good. I mean, he had a tremendous amount of success in the booth in his first year. He's always been a guy who everyone knows is a very good golfer. Now, that doesn't mean he can do what he may dream. What exactly are his golf dreams?
It's a great question, Mike. I walked the course with him in Tahoe last Wednesday on a practice round, and we talked a lot about it. And Mike, he hired a golf team this off season, and for a few weeks, he basically has gone to work every day at 9 o'clock in the morning down in Dallas to basically work on his golf game. He doesn't know where it's going to end. He doesn't know if, Like today he is in Wisconsin playing 36 holes after winning that tournament yesterday in Tahoe. Flew to Wisconsin, got there wee hours of the morning, and went out, and he's playing 36 holes today to try to qualify for the U.S. Amateur at Pebble Beach in a month. And so he doesn't know how good he could be at golf. I think he shot 74, 69, 68 in Tahoe this weekend, but he just doesn't know. And so I think he wants to give himself, he's 38 years old, he wants to give himself the best chance to be good. I asked him flat out, would you rather be Spieth or would you rather be Madden? You know, and I think he gets really kind of embarrassed when he thinks that anybody could think he could be the best at either one of those things. But I think he doesn't know, and I think he feels like, I've got the time now, and I would always question myself if I didn't see how good I could get at golf.
Interesting, and you know, it's not easy. It's very difficult, as you see with a guy like Smoltz, who's a tremendous player, and you saw how much trouble he had when he tried to even just go over and qualify.
Mike, at one point, Romo said to me the other day, he goes, you know, just when you think you really are playing well, golf in 2 minutes can totally humble you. And so that's why he's not sitting back there saying, oh, yeah, watch this. I'm going to be on the tour one day, or I'm going to be on the satellite tour, or I'm going to do anything. He doesn't know. So he's going to go and work at it and see what happens.
If I could pick a camp, we're talking with Peter King, who made the move over to NBC, and you'll see him at NBCSports.com. You see him on TV, but you also see him, you can find him now on NBCSports.com with his Football Morning in America column. If I could think of one place that I think would be interesting, it would be San Francisco, because they believe they have a new god at quarterback, so he changes everything for them, and he is really talented, as we all know. Is that the one that interests you, or somebody else interests you in training camp?
I think the Indianapolis Colts are really interesting because of, obviously, you haven't seen Andrew Luck.
Yeah, can
play.
He or can't he?
You haven't seen him play.
I agree
so long.
With that. Can he play? That's the question. I mean, he's my favorite player. I'd like to know if he could play anymore.
Yeah, that's right. But I think you're right. In my opinion, the most compelling story in the NFL this summer is Jimmy Garoppolo. We watched him after, you know, playing, basically starting two games in 3.5 years for the Patriots and looking pretty promising. And that bizarre trade that someday I want to give John Lynch sodium pentothal and say, how in the world did this thing happen for a two, for whatever it was, the 41st pick in the draft? And then, you know, Garoppolo goes in, and essentially what he does is he comes in, and in the month of December, he's a top 10 quarterback in the NFL. And you're looking at him and you're saying, how in the world does it happen that he plays so well in a new place? Honestly, Mike, as you know, with not a very good team. And so I think he goes 5-0 down the stretch.
Yep.
And it's funny. I was walking with Romo, and I was talking to him, asking him about Garoppolo, and I thought he was going to talk about Garoppolo. He talked about Kyle Shanahan, and he said to me that one of the things that fascinates him the most about Garoppolo is that of all the coaches you could go with right now in the NFL, an imaginative guy who, like, you know, honestly, Mike, Sean McVay and Kyle Shanahan could have a rivalry for the next 10 years like Bill Parcells and Joe Gibbs had.
That's a great rivalry,
I mean,
yeah.
It could be really fantastic. And think about it this way, if you're Jimmy Garoppolo. You get drafted into the NFL in 2014 by Bill Belichick. You sit in the quarterback room every day with Tom Brady, and there's Josh McDaniels as the daily coach. And you go in and you play pretty well in a couple of games, and then you get traded, and you go to a team with Kyle Shanahan as your professional mentor now for the next few years. I mean, how has anybody in recent years had as good a baseline right now as Jimmy Garoppolo has had? He's a guy who's 26 years old. And to me, I just think his sort of schooling in the game right now. I mean, we could argue that maybe you would want Deshaun Watson, Russell Wilson. I don't know. You'd pick out somebody, I'm sure, who you like more than Garoppolo right now. But Garoppolo and Shanahan, especially with Garoppolo's training to this point, is pretty formidable.
Oh, I think it is, and I think he's a unique talent. I really do. I think he's a very unique talent, and it's still a weird place the league's in right now. Is the anthem thing a still divisive, troubling issue, or I don't think what they did solves anything. Does it go away by its own? Just does it fade away, or is it still going to be a front page story again this year?
Well, Mike, it looks like later this week or early next week, there will be representatives of the union meeting with people with the league, because the union is going to sue the NFL about this, about trying to enforce a policy that the union feels is unenforceable. You're forcing players to declare what they want to do for the anthem. But so we'll see what happens. But I think the biggest problem that the NFL has in this, remember a year ago, they gave players like $90 million over a 7-year period to go to spend on social causes that right. They found important. Well, the NFL never asked for anything in return. And the inference in all this was that the players basically would stop protesting during the anthem because it was bad for business. They never asked the players to do that. So now that players kept protesting during the anthem, they kept getting called out by Trump, that basically it still became an issue, and the NFL owners decided to do something about it, and that enraged the players, because by the end of the year, there was only, what, 6 or 8 people, if that, but in the last few weeks of the season, protesting in any way, either sitting or kneeling or doing anything. So I think that it's not over, and I think the league did not handle it intelligently.
No, I think it wasn't a very good decision. To me, it doesn't help. It doesn't fix anything, especially when you have owners who already came out and said they weren't even going to enforce it. Will pay the fines. I mean, if you're going to pay the fines.
I don't mean that the NFL made a bad decision by saying that players who don't want to stand can stay in the locker room. I don't mean that, because in a lot of ways, it's probably a smart solution, even though the players are really ticked off at it. What I mean is that, you know, the NBA, you ask Steve Kerr this, you ask people who are with the NBA Players Association, the NBA came to them and said, look, we can't have this. We can't have, it was Chris Jackson, I think, and I forget his Muslim name, but...
Oh, yeah, he was the guy who sat down during the anthem, Abdul Rauf was his name, I think.
So
yeah.
The union went to the NBA, and they basically said, we got to work out a solution to this. And they tried to work out a solution. They did work out a solution so that now every player on the sidelines and for an NBA game stands at attention. And the NFL basically handed the players $90 million and never asked for anything in return. I have no idea at the time, why wouldn't they have just said, listen, here's what we need for our business and for your salary cap, because eventually it could impact on your business. We need to do something that is going to get every player to stand for the anthem. And if you're not going to stand for the anthem, think of an alternative. And in that case, I think the players probably would have said, hey, let whoever wants to stay in the locker room. But when you're forcing players to do something, I think that's what the players objected to.
Has Owens messed up the Hall of Fame with his exploits here?
It seems like it to me, Mike, but as I look at this thing, you know, about 2/3 of the players who are in the Pro Football Hall of Fame, there's over 300 players, coaches, owners, whatever, about 2/3 of them did not get in on the first ballot. Okay, so I don't go into the Hall of Fame, and I don't look at Harry Carson's bust. I don't look at Lynn Swann's bust. I don't look at Ron Yeary's bust and say, yeah, that guy's not as good a Hall of Famer as Barry Sanders or Brett Favre. They're all the same. They all have bronze busts. They're all pro football Hall of Famers. And no one thinks because a guy got in his seventh year that, oh, well, he's in the secondary Hall of Fame.
No.
It's just, it's a ridiculous thing.
I've never even thought of it before.
It's ridiculous to get so ticked off at this. And so, look, but in my opinion, the league probably, the Hall of Fame probably should have said, in essence, hey, listen, let's be bigger than him, and let's just give him all the requisite attention that he would normally get, even though he's not here. Let's play his highlights. Let's do whatever that they do, and he's just not here. He's chosen not to be here. So what? Life goes on.
All right, listen, good luck with the NBC stuff. Thank you.
Appreciate it, Mike.
Thank you. Take care.
Peter
King, NBCSports.com.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.